The following podcast is a W2M Network original production. Visit W2Mnet.com for all of our other great podcasts, plus news, reviews, articles, and opinions from the worlds of wrestling, video games, football, and entertainment.
Toss to White. He's in. Patriots win the Super Bowl. Brady has his fifth. What a comeback.
Watson. Touchdown. Hunter Renfro. Little man makes another enormous play. 1 second remaining.
Ladies and gentlemen, football to the max.
Your host, Sean Garmer, Gary Vaughn, and Randy Isbell.
Hello and welcome to another football to the max after this is officially now preseason week one. And we had quite a few games on this evening. Eric and I watched a few of them, namely the preseason version of Thursday Night Football with the Chicago Bears and Denver Broncos. So we'll mainly be talking about that as well as the Wednesday night first game with the Panthers and Texans. And then we each had a game that we watched sort of closely. And we'll talk about the other games that happened on Thursday, along with the rest of the games from the weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday on the Monday edition, as we, again, like I said, try to use these 4 weeks to kind of iron out the kinks of how we want to do this when the season starts. Obviously, it'll be a lot better for you guys because it'll only be games from Sunday and Monday and not having games that happen on various days, which you may have already really, really watched by then. We'll have to obviously be cognizant of that and figure out something to that effect. We've also got some news here, but not a whole lot. So between the two things, that's what we're going to do today. Then, like I said, Monday will kind of be more of a full slate show, but of course, I am your host, Sean Garmer, and here with me, Mr. Eric Watkins.
Three games down, 13 to go, and I had a weird moment with Skype before we got on the air.
That's always nice. Skype delivers, if anything, weird moments.
So I'll say.
So, I mean, this was preseason week one here. Night one, I guess you could officially call it.
Technically night two.
Technically, but I mean, they acted like they didn't even, you know, if you listen to the NFL, you know, broadcasts here, they act like Wednesday didn't happen. So
this is true, which is kind of sad.
I think they feel like Wednesday might have been just a grab from the previous week or something. I don't know.
But it wasn't. There were some significant moments in that Wednesday game.
Yeah, so let's start with the game that kind of just ended about an hour ago, at least the main one that was on NFL Network. Of course, the big story coming out of it, and obviously, look, we can't break this down like we would a regular game because most of that game didn't matter. It's hard to talk about guys that probably aren't going to make the team.
Like Mark Sanchez.
Mark Sanchez would probably be the third QB.
Sure. You think that.
Why wouldn't he if you're carrying three QBs, he's your third QB?
Yeah, but who's to say John Fox doesn't just decide to carry two?
Well, that's fine. But if he carries three, Mark Sanchez didn't do anything to say no.
Fine, just on a note, historical patterns show that Sanchez has become something of an unlucky charm, and I think the fact that he only played two series might be adding to that effect. Now, granted, I'm not going to overreact because it's week one, but still.
He also doesn't really need to play that much either. You kind of know what you have in him at this point. But still, the things we do need to talk about, the quarterbacks here. Mike Glennon had an awful game for the first quarter that he played. Pick six on his second throw. Of course, he is playing Chris Harris Jr. and the Denver Broncos, you know, most of their first defense, especially the secondary. So that's not anything to scoff at there, but still throwing a pick six, no bueno. 20 yards passing. I think he went 2 for 8. Yikes.
I don't even think it was 2 for 8. I think it was 2 for 6. And on that pick six, to his credit, he pretty much got hit in the face. But
After he threw the ball.
Yeah, and
I'm surprised they didn't call that.
But it's still never good that you finish with a quarterback rating of 0.
Meanwhile, his competition, I guess you could call it that, Mitchell Trubisky, he was on fire in this game. 10 for 10. Look, this is against, like, third-team defense.
Yeah, but so, he's playing with a lot of, like, second-team and third-team guys.
I mean, Victor Cruz is no slouch that he's playing with either.
No. And I get that Victor Cruz arguably could be one of their best receivers. He wasn't out there with the ones. I just don't like the argument that they're going, it's against the twos and threes. And I'm like, at the same time, he's playing with the twos and threes. So shut up. Sorry, had to get that off my chest.
Well, you're right about that. Obviously, you got to start somewhere. But the fact that he was accurate, he made the throws. Yeah, he didn't make the game-winning or the game-tying touchdown. You would have thought they probably would have gone for two to avoid having to go to a stupid overtime. But because I was about to say, we are not sitting through overtime for a preseason game.
No, and I personally think they need to go to the CFL format and say, all right, if it's tied, game over. Go home.
Right, yeah, exactly. Or force them to have to take the two-point conversion in that kind of situation. But still, I think you have to take positives out of this from Mitchell Trubisky in that he scrambled when he needed to and he got first downs. He made the smart throws. He didn't throw into some crazy coverage. They schemed it to where it was easy for him. That pass that he throws to Victor Cruz for the touchdown is something that almost any quarterback should be able to do. It's not anything out of this world, but again, this is what you're wanting him to do, easing him out of the offense.
Yeah.
And,
Yeah, he was very good at finding checkdowns, dumping off passes in the middle of the field, and even where there was a little bit of pressure, he was able to step up in the pocket and try to make the deep throws. I mean, yes, this is his first taste of action, but I liked what I saw, and if he can do this again next week, I can make the argument that this at least bumps him up to the number two spot.
Oh, well, yeah. I think Mark Sanchez is there in case they really don't want to put Trubisky in. But I feel like if you're putting him in two-minute drills before the half to make sure he does it, which is when they score the touchdown that he throws, the first one,
that
tells you what they want him to be and that they have plans for him. Certainly, obviously, you don't take a number two if they don't have plans. But that there's a possibility that they believe he could be starting at some point this season. If not, from the get-go, if he keeps playing like this. And another, you know, a person that could be maybe a third down back or at least positioning himself that way, Tariq Cohen, he looked really good tonight as well. Again, preface this by saying that, yes, there was times where he was playing against the first team defense, but he shined more when he was playing against that second team defense. Mm-hmm. He had some good runs, you know, and that's something to be lauded. I think that the receiving core, for the most part, looked decent, except for the tight ends. Zach Miller dropping a pass there wasn't...
And that's why I was a little bit dubious when they mentioned that the Bears are going to be featuring a lot of that 12 offense, one back and the two tight ends. So I'm like, you're not doing yourself too many favors if you don't have consistent receiving threats from that tight end spot. So I hope that that's one thing that they'll focus on before they head out to Arizona for their sake. I mean, other than that, there weren't too many complaints.
I think what's positive too is it showed that he was playing in several different offenses. Mm-hmm. He was able to just get out there with no set when they were trying to score at the end. So positive things from Trubisky. Another thing that was positive is there wasn't a lot of positives, honestly, for Denver. I think Trevor Siemian looked fine. Paxton Lynch looked okay.
He looked okay and got lucky because I believe it's John Henderson, middle linebacker for the Bears, number 58, wound up with a leg injury late in the game. I looked at one play. He's right there. He could breathe on the back of
Paxton. Oh, yeah, he's standing right there next to him. It's like he doesn't realize that Paxton Lynch
and
is there.
Like, I had to stare, and I'm like, are you kidding me? What are you doing? That's a sack. Just grab him. Wow.
Yeah, Denver basically wins because the quarterback, Slaughter, I'm going to say his name, throws a huge bomb to McKenzie when they're playing like the fourth team defense at this point. And then he throws another touchdown later. But Chicago's defense that was on the field, the first and second teamers, they were really good in this game. Floyd had a tremendous sack, looking like himself already. I think we might want to consider, you know, Chicago's defense being a little bit underrated coming into the season. But again, this is preseason game number one. Don't want to get too over it. Cody Whitehair with the over-the-head snap was just like the culmination of the day for Mike Glennon. I felt bad for him at that point.
And it's this Mike Glennon, your pencil head speaks volumes. Poor dude.
Yeah, I think for the most part, Denver's first-team defense was Denver's first-team defense and that they're still very good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, like, putting a preface to all this stuff, but I think for the most part, the rest of it was just kind of okay. You know, like, I think I took more out of what Chicago did than Denver, even though Denver won.
Yeah, I mean, Denver won thanks to a fantastic, again, that touchdown pass, blown coverage, the game-winning touchdown run. I don't know how Henderson broke through like that, but in the end, Denver's their first 10 points were made thanks to Chicago mistakes. So, of course, there's a lot to clean up, but signs are at least pointing to decent, and they could be trending upward, which is what you want from your first preseason game.
Yeah, I think for the most part, it's exactly that. You know, Chicago found out that they did the right call with Trubisky. Let's, you know, it'd be interesting if next week he plays with the first team and gets those first team reps, at least, you know, partially. I know Mike Glennon's going to be upset and everything, but hey, look, they've invested a lot of stock in Trubisky, and you might want to see, and maybe not the second, and I'd say the second one because you want to be ready to see if you want him to start that third preseason game, which is, you know, consider that dress rehearsal game.
Right. So I think they're going to treat him like Seattle treated Russell Wilson his rookie year. Originally, Matt Flynn was going to be the guy signing that big contract coming from Green Bay. He didn't produce, and then Russell Wilson came in and started lighting it up, kept lighting it up. So, yes, by the third week, he was with the ones. Everything stayed the same. That wasn't the starting job. And that's why I say the way that Trubisky is going, yeah, right now he'll be putting himself in position to be the number two. Next week is going to be the determinant. Get him some reps with the ones, some reps with the twos, see what happens. He does well enough, he starts that third preseason game.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. Let's see if that's what winds up happening. Let's move on, though, as we have three other games to sort of touch on here. The other game that we both watched was the Panthers and Texans. This was in Carolina. No Cam Newton. Derek Anderson starts out, plays a couple of series. He looked good with the first teamers. The touchdown he throws to Kelvin Benjamin was spot on. Benjamin looked good here, too. They used the two different running backs. McCaffrey had a couple of good runs. I don't remember seeing why can't I remember his name now? The kid from Ohio State at all.
I didn't see him myself. So, it was mainly, and especially later in the game, like that second half, McCaffrey was more of the featured back. So,
well, McCaffrey wasn't even there at that point. They had Cameron Artis Payne and Fozzie Whitaker and
They had, I think, going towards the fourth quarter, that's when they really highlighted Whitaker.
Yeah, I think they have some, obviously there's receiver depth issues there for the Panthers. If everybody can stay healthy, they'll be fine, because they, you know, still have Greg Olsen and between Benjamin Funchess and the other few guys that they have, they'll be okay. I think it's a nice 1-2 punch with Stewart and McCaffrey if they can figure that out, how they want that to roll heading into the season. On Houston's end, Tom Savage was efficient. That's what he is. He's pretty good. Deshaun Watson, you kind of saw the ups and downs of a rookie quarterback, right? He overthrew some guys. He used his legs a lot. He would escape, but he wouldn't actually make the pass after he escapes. But then as the game wore on, he made better throws, connected with guys, kind of made the decisions you wanted to make, hitting Braxton Miller, hitting pretty much everybody, hitting his tight end a bunch. That kid Anderson, him and Watson had a wonderful connection. They connected for I don't know how many passes. I thought Deonta Foreman looked pretty good.
He really did. And just going back and touching on Watson, what I liked about him, efficiency as far as his release. And he can take that release and turn it into better accuracy and decision making. That can easily happen because he is malleable. So, yeah, there's, again, another...
Well, and then you get the... You get the, what you don't get with Tom Savage, which is using his legs for that touchdown.
Oh, yeah. A run, there was a huge hole in the A-gap, and all of a sudden, bloop, right there in the end zone.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, 16 yards right up the gut, pretty much. And, you know, not too difficult for Deshaun Watson at that point, but... I think as the preseason goes on, we'll see him get better. For a first-time outing, I think it was kind of half and half on the good and bad parts. That's after watching, you know, with the condensed version with a Game Pass. So I thought for the most part, you can count on him to. I don't know that he's going to want to be in the starter because again, it's not. Like, that's the thing, though, right? Like, Mitch Trubisky profited greatly from the horrible game that Mike Glennon had tonight. compared to Deshaun Watson having to go after Thomas that was just pretty efficient again. And then, you know, having to play the bulk of the game and still looking pretty good for the most part.
Yeah, I think with Trubisky, the plan really wasn't to have him maybe starting later in the season, but with how everything fell into place tonight, now you have a guy, he's already trending to be a good number two. Now you can work on him being the number one if play develops in certain ways. But with Watson and Houston, I think the plan was always more going, okay, we have a guy that can really help us out and win us some games in Savage. He was the best that we had of our crop, really, the last couple of years. Let's see if we can keep him as the number one, have him healthy doing his thing, and if need be, have Watson as our number two.
Yeah, Joe Webb also looked pretty decent. For his most, I think it was a lot like Watson. You got a lot of, well, bad throws. The interception was really bad. Just a miss, either a miscommunication there or just a bad throw getting the touchback. But then he made some more smart decisions that the a game went on. Had some good runs as well as you'd expect from him.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't go anywhere, but him just stiff-arming that guy. Was like, yeah, you don't see too many quarterbacks do that, so.
Well, I mean, remember, Joe Webb's been around for a while. He showed flashes of that when he was in Minnesota. Plus, having spent time at receiver as well, he knows a lot of extra moves that you don't see in too many quarterbacks, even the athletic ones.
Yep, true that. Panthers wound up winning that game. Honestly, a few things could have gone the Texans' way and could have been different, but that's how these preseason games go sometimes. Once you get to those third, fourth team guys, it's really about who's better and, you know, who has
not to mention, you still have Brandon Whedon, okay? You're not going too much of anywhere with Brandon Whedon under center.
Fair enough, but again, Brandon Whedon was also throwing to like a third team guys, so.
Okay,
he did win them some games when he did start. So.
Yeah, but again, Houston, before that Dallas, before that Cleveland. Come on now. He's still Brandon Whedon, right at home with the third team guys against third teamers. And even then, things got shaky. So what does that tell you?
Yeah, it tells you stuff. I just think it's different, though. When you're playing third team guys, you can't rely on them as much as you can the first team guys. You don't know where they're going to be. You can throw, and you don't know if they're going to be there.
But no, this furthers my argument. The fact that you have him playing not as the starter. We've seen that. It ended up god-awful.
Well, because you already know who your starter and your second guy are.
Right, but I mean with Brandon Whedon specifically at other teams in his career. Didn't work well when he's the number one. And now when you know you have him planted at the number three and there are still issues, you wonder, do we really need to keep giving him another chance?
Well, I mean, he's a serviceable backup. So if you have to go down to your third, if Watson and Savage get hurt, then, you know, it is what it is for them. So, you know, I think moving on here, speaking of Cleveland, I did watch the Cleveland Browns and New Orleans Saints game. Brock Osweiler looked okay. He had guys dropping passes. He also wasn't. He had moments where he wasn't very good. And in fact, while he was playing, the Browns did not make a first down. So, again, not all of it was his fault. Some guys just dropped passes and whatever.
I know. I understand, but like we discussed on our other podcast, what I specifically mentioned about Cleveland and bad, I'm not saying anything either way because you're only in the first week of the preseason, but if I'm sitting here 2-3 weeks from now and there are some painful trends, prepare to get a level of bitterness and angst for me and how I want to root for them. I'm forewarning you and everybody.
Fair enough. Fair enough. I think the thing to take, there's two things to take out of this here is that Cody Kessler didn't get enough play time for me to really evaluate, you know, what to do there. So I can't really talk about him. The defense was very much improved. He's been in the league for a little bit, but Orchard looked like he wanted to take people's heads off most of the time. Nassib, the brother of the Giants quarterback, Nassib, was rather active in this game. Picked up the fumble that happened earlier on. The front edge, Jamie Collins, had some good moments when he was on the field. Overall, the Cleveland Browns defense was much more motivated. They looked like Greg Williams was coaching them, and they were going after it. And they were. I'm excited to kind of see that Browns defense. Like, you can tell that, you know, who's coaching them and that they're pumped for you know, preseason games. This is interesting to see because the Browns, you know, defensively haven't looked greatest. Now, listen, like, there was parts where you got to that 3rd and 4th team where Garrett Grayson and, you know, the other Nassib quarterback were kind of ripping them to shreds there, but again, you're getting to the 3rd and 4th team guys. That being said, 3rd and 4th team guys, DeShone Kizer, very much like DeShone Watson, he had moments where, okay, he's a rookie quarterback. He's holding the ball too long. He's scrambling and then not getting out of the way and still getting sacked. But then he had two long bombs for touchdowns. So he showed that arm strength that we saw at Notre Dame. 52-yard pass and a 48-yard pass. And that kid Mullaney from Alabama who went undrafted, watch out, he could wind up making the team because he was actually pretty good. He's a terrific route runner. And, yeah, I liked what I saw from the Browns. Again, it's Kizer's at that point playing against the 2nd and 13 defenses, and he had a lot of not that great moments, too. I think they were right in probably going with Oswalo to start because probably what you saw from the scrimmage is probably the good and bad that you saw in this game.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think overall sort of thumbs up performance for Kizer in this one. And yeah, New Orleans, no Drew Brees. I think the Kamara kid from Tennessee, he looks good. Again, let's see more week 2, week 3 what happens with that. I forgot who they're about. Oh, Chase Daniel looked like he'd been having some seasoning playing behind in Kansas City and all that. So if something happens to Drew Brees, I think Saints fans can be okay with Chase Daniel.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong. Before he went to Kansas City, he had spent time as a backup under Drew Brees in New Orleans.
Yeah, I think he was on and off there. Like, and then he went to the Chiefs and got more coaching there from Andy Reid and everybody. I think the receivers dropped some passes again, so you still got to figure that out if you're New Orleans. Dropped a surefire, like, would have been putting you in position to be at. I think that one of them dropped a touchdown, and another one dropped a surefire, would have been a first down to put you in field goal range. And the defense, you know, that defense still got some work. But again, like, we didn't really get to see a lot of the first team defensive guys. So,
right.
So, what did you see? I know you only saw, like, parts of this because you missed it. But Miami wound up rallying to come back and win.
I did see, like, bits and pieces of the first half. Matt Ryan did his thing very well. They made it easy for him, first preseason game. Devontae Freeman fresh off of his contract with the touchdown run. For Miami, there were two things that stuck with me and how they rallied back that I like. Forcing turnovers and being very aggressive, not just on defense, but did a lot on special teams. And special teams, especially in the preseason, extremely underrated unless you're doing something wrong. But there were plays where Miami was able to capitalize and get two big turnovers. And how they got to, well, eventually winning the game, literally a 99.5-yard touchdown pass from their, I believe, third-string quarterback fails to kid out of Ole Miss. A weird, almost like portmanteau, rhymes with marshmallow. I know that's not his last name, and I terribly apologize, but it rhymes with marshmallow. I have to go back and look it up and get it right. Boy, this is going to make Twitter. But inside their own one, fails drop back. What looked like just a simple go route, just in or outside of his own 30, caught, had to do almost a double, triple move to shake the defensive back and run the rest of the way for a touchdown.
Pretty awesome.
Plays like that get you noticed. Again, apologies on me for not getting your name, but other people are definitely going to know it a lot better than I will.
Yeah, after that, that's going to be one of those things you remember, honestly.
Oh, yes. So, very
string fellow.
Yes, that's the one. I was like, wait, because I looked at it and they had it covered up and everybody was hugging him because team was coming off of the bench. And I'm like, wait, does that say Marshmallow? Why I can't see his name? String fellow.
Marshmallow.
I'm sorry, I saw the last L-L-O-W and things like that. I think Marshmallow.
It's okay, we're not going to... Look, seriously, if you tried to ask me what half of those third and fourth team guys' names are at this point, I'm not going to remember. I tried to write down as many as I could when I was taking notes, but...
Well, even with the Broncos and Bears, it was like three different Hendersons out there. One got hurt, one dropped a couple of kick returns, and another scored a touchdown. And I'm like, how am I going to keep up with this?
Yeah, there was like two different Thompsons. I'm like, oh, God, enough already with this. anything else from the game before we move on?
Oh, that was pretty much it. Miami, lot to look forward to, and eerily convenient that all of their preseason games are on Thursdays this season.
Yeah, so we'll get to the rest of the games from Thursday along with the rest of the games from the weekend on the Monday show. Again, probably what we'll do is we'll probably focus more on the games from Sunday and some from Saturday, and then the other ones will kind of be quick hits because obviously you guys don't care about stuff that happened on Thursday by the time we get to Sunday. But thankfully, during the regular season, it's only one game you have to worry about. Trying to dual screen while taking notes on both those games on a Thursday kind of sucks. It's so much nicer to just be able to go back with Game Pass and take notes on the one game that you're doing at that point. So...
And especially when you're distracted by pictures of people on TV shows. I mean, Carly Patton, who plays Iris on The Flash. Wonderful, great pictures, but I'm like, I'm kind of busy doing stuff.
So
weird moments in the House of the Squid come Thursday nights.
Yeah, for sure. I have kid running in and out constantly, and somebody wanting to move this over here and do this, and it's like, oh my god, I'm trying to watch this game, stop.
Mm-hmm.
But that's life, honestly. So you mentioned it, Devonta Freeman. On Tuesday, we found out he's gotten a big 5-year contract extension, worth $41.25 million, and will average $8.25 million over the life of the contract. Nowhere near the Le'Veon Bell $12 million, but still a nice. It's still better than LeSean McCoy. So Devontae Freeman getting paid like a big running back now.
Now, realistically, what would I have to do to convince Devontae Freeman that extra $250,000 hurts his bottom line and it's a lot cooler to have a contract that's a round number? And if he were to relieve that $250,000 to someone like, say, I don't know, the two of us? I mean, I'm wanting to formulate some kind of plan here. And me being me, you get it 50-50. I'm like that. It's only fair.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I don't think that's happening anytime soon, but we can dream, right?
Yeah, because it's like, 125 for me, 125 for you. He still has $41 million. Life goes on.
Right? I think... obviously, he deserves it, right? He was
of course
a leading receiver for them. He's obviously their best running back. I wonder what this means for Tevin Coleman. Is he officially now? They're not going to be having them go back and forth. Devonta Freeman is going to be out there for the most part.
Yeah. Now, what I want to know? Yes, he's going to be their primary back. And you mentioned his receiving skills. Are they even going to come close to what's being floated around with what David Johnson said in Arizona? Because I don't think that would really be necessary for the Falcons.
Oh, no, you don't need that for them. They got way too many good receivers.
Yeah.
Even that you can even use Tevin Coleman in that role if you want instead of Freeman,
mm-hmm.
and save him some mileage. I wonder if, Tevin Coleman starts looking around and wondering if he's expendable, too.
I wouldn't necessarily say after right now, but if he finds his carry shrinking and shrinking as the season goes, then as we get towards November, December, that'll be sniffing around time.
Yeah, certainly going into the next season, he's going to be wanting something, whether it's a release or a trade or him just wanting to go to another team at that point if he feels like he's never going to really be a factor on the field. But again, they can use him, and we saw them do that last year, use him on screens, use him in passing situations, use them both kind of that way interchangeably, and Devonta Freeman was kind of the guy on the ground. So they could still do that. And Devonta Freeman still earns his, $8.25 million as long as he performs well. We mentioned Le'Veon Bell. One of his teammates, Martavis Bryant, has been conditionally reinstated so that he can play in preseason games and practice with the team, which is good. Obviously he had to sit out, or not obviously, but he had to sit out for a year for the substance abuse.
Mm-hmm. Baby steps? That the only thing I can describe this as baby steps. The league is awful weird when it comes to reinstatement.
Brian must continue to attend mandatory counseling sessions in order to get the full reinstatement. But as long as he's, just doing his thing on the field, which Ben Roethlisberger already says he looks like a stud, And obviously he's going to help them as well. They really missed him last year, having that dynamic threat that he presents. They could definitely, you know, once again be a formidable in, you know, the receiving game and everything else. So, I mean, this is, maybe Le'Veon Bell doesn't have to be the second leading receiver on the team. Maybe Martavis Bryant can actually hold that spot.
Exactly, and when you've got a more opening AFC North, Roethlisberger flirting around the idea that this may be his last rodeo, I mean, go out, if not on top, get yourself close. They will need a piece like Martavis Bryant to help them do that.
Yeah, we'll see how, if he plays this first week of the preseason, or they kind of hold him off until next week. But shall be just kind of interesting to see him. Speaking of interesting, feels like this should have happened a long time ago, but glad that they're finally doing it. The NFL is going to hire 24 full-time officials for the 2017 season. It currently houses 124 officials, and the NFL Referees Association agreed to approve the full-time official move. They have to go apply to become a full-time official. There's going to be officials hired at each of the seven positions, as you'd expect. And basically this allows them to just keep working during the offseason to get better, as you would think they would, and, you know, get paid like being a full-time employee. I'm just glad this is happening. You need full-time officials. There will be no more excuses about, well, this guy had his lawyer job that he had to do.
Hey, you know, hey, don't go knocking Ed Hockley entirely. I mean, being in a courtroom, still finding time to go to the gym, he's a busy man.
Well, you need to go to the gym. You're running around.
Exactly, but you need to go to the gym extra to be looking as cut as he is after all these years.
Well, you know, props to him. Props to him for that. This is a great decision by the league. These guys deserve to get paid.
Yeah, very long overdue, and I think with a lot of issues that'll be creeping up over the next coming years, like the CBA, they're spending this season, and I hope next in the season after that, trying to get a lot of minute things in order. And this is a pretty big chunk of what a lot of people consider the minute things. So, better late than never. Better now than before it's too late.
You know, we were talking about in our, you know, Twitter chat that we have with the Bundesliga deciding that VAR is going to have the final say, and I noticed that they've apparently changed the review rules when I was watching one of the games. Now it's the league office in New York that makes the final decision on a replay.
Yep.
Do you like that, taking it out of the hands of the head official and saying, okay, we're going to trust a bunch of guys watching on TV?
Well, I do, because they started going to this in the NHL. When they did a review system, they went into NHL headquarters in Toronto. A bunch of officials staring at video of every game. That's how they did it. It spread to Major League Baseball. Under review, they have separate umpires in Cooperstown. In the Canadian Football League, they have their officials in Toronto. Now it's everyone watching every game, and it's centralized. Unlike VAR, where it's different stadia where it's a little bit faster, it's centralized. Now,
well, they're there at the stadium.
Yeah, they're there at the stadium, and you also have, instead of going under the hood, you have the guy standing right there.
That's got to be so weird for the guy. Like, he's just standing there, like, hey,
yeah,
how you doing?
He's in the blue vest, holding the monitor, or, like, the surface monitor, and he's like, okay, here you go. It wouldn't be weird.
You can't have like another official hold it. Like, you gotta just have this random dude and he just has the camera on him the whole time. Like, that dude that was there doing it today, he was just kind of like, oh, hi, I'm getting looked at by I don't know how many people here. Like,
hey, too bad. I mean, and I saw that in Miami too, and I'm like, pay me, I'll be that guy.
Yeah. I'm not saying it's a bad gig. I'm just saying it's kind of awkward.
Exactly. I'm standing there, and it's like, oh, hey, ref, I know why you're here. Here you go. You do your thing. And a lot of times, if I happen to be near some of the cheerleaders, I'll be like, hey, what's up? You know, how you doing?
But I guess that's there to make it faster, having the laptop there or the tablet instead of going under the hood. And
yep. So I believe the folks in New York give him those specific feeds to look at. He goes around, has a conversation, and again, it's streamlined. I have no problem with this.
I wonder if we'll be able to get into like the college football system where maybe we don't have to have challenges. If they do this fast enough, you can just do it upstairs in New York. You don't even have to have the head referee look at it and say, all right, decision made, you know, that was a catch, not a catch, whatever.
If they can define their rules about what a catch is, that would certainly make things smoother.
Or was that a fumble, not a fumble, interception? Right. Not a, you know.
Right. I think you give this a year or two. So I say by 2019, 2020, absolute worst case scenario, I think we will get to that college football style system. Have a guy up in the booth and say, hey, wait a minute.
Right. Oh, yeah. Wait. Let's just hope it's a lot of confusion. Or less confusion than we sometimes have now. So it felt like they were taking a little bit too long to make some of these penalty decisions in these games, too.
It's preseason for the rest, too, Sean.
Come on now. Come on. Jimmy Graham has lost 20 pounds and went from 280 to 260. And he says, you know, Tony Gonzalez told me that I needed to lose weight as I got older. And that, you know, now he feels 100 times better than last year. And he's got strength in his knee. He's ready to be back in form and catch more than 65 balls and get more than 9,823 yards. Do you think this helps Jimmy Graham get much more up to that level like he was in New Orleans, or do you think losing the weight doesn't matter?
A fun little factoid. For every pound of weight that you lose, that takes off 7 pounds of pressure on your knees.
Yep.
Think about that. Now multiply that by 20. This is going to help him tremendously. It's going to lead to, as you say, better strength, a little more flexibility. That flexibility means better leverage on blocking and better ability to run routes. That better leverage on blocking and better ability to run routes means you find yourself open a little more often. You find yourself open, you get more involved in the offense. You get more involved in the offense, your numbers go up. It's a chain reaction. Will he get to the level like he got to in New Orleans? He might come close, but will he be better than last year? Exponentially.
Let's hope that that continues for Jimmy Graham. And finally, the New England Patriots become the first team to buy planes for travel. Why not? You're the New England Patriots. The first to buy a 767. In fact, mainly because the 767 apparently is going away. The main airlines do not want to refurbish these kinds of planes as they're kind of going the way of the dodo. So the Patriots bought not only one, but two at a whopping the price tag is between $5 and $65 million. Had they bought them new, it would have cost them $200 million per plane.
Robert Kraft, don't you have some other teams in your stadium that you know you're supposed to be caring about right now? Why ain't some of that money filtering down to them?
Hey, they did get Christian Nemeth, so.
But this just still proves my point. I rest my case. The fact that they have two planes and they adorn them with the Patriots logo and you have their five Super Bowl trophies on the tail, it's like, yeah, this makes me want to punch people. Typical Patriot way.
Well, you know, Robert Kraft kind of just looks at the Patriots like his favorite son, right? He's showering him with all the gifts and everything, and the New England Revolution are like that.
Red-headed stepchild?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, they do stuff? Great. Here's your pat on the back for, like, getting the MLS Cup. But I'm still not really going to do a lot for you as far as getting you players you need or paying some of those players to make sure that they're happy. Nope. We're just going to keep things status quo because they're not the Patriots.
Now, next time we get into an argument about this, mark this tape. I am going to play it and shove it in your face.
When did I say that they're not the redhead stepchild of Robert Kraft?
But you get on me for when I emphasize the fact that they are.
I do?
Okay. But you have.
I probably have, I just don't remember. That's yesterday with all the yelling, I think I am.
Oh, no, this was even before yesterday. The yelling yesterday was entirely different.
But all right, I think that sort of covers it for us on this one. As I said, on Monday we're going to be looking at more games. Eric and I are going to kind of split them up, talk about as many as we can. We're probably going to try to come up with a system so that it's not kind of just going all over the place with covering guys and we don't spend like way too long on too many games or whatnot, but we'll see. Kind of just depends on what's going on with the news. It appears that apparently Ezekiel Elliott could get his suspension handed down at any moment on Friday even. So be on the lookout for that. We'll for sure be talking about that on Monday if perhaps we don't come to you earlier depending on the severity of this thing. But all right. Until Monday night, Tuesday morning, if you enjoyed what you heard, hit that subscribe button, write a review, put those 5 stars on there, let us know that you enjoyed what you heard, you know, to leave a comment for Eric or myself on WTMnet.com, go listen on Last Word Radio, or wherever else we have podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube. TuneIn Radio, Google Play, it's all there. Just, you know, and if for some reason there was not a podcatcher that you like that we're not on, let us know. I'll put it on there. Go ahead.
I was just about to say, and if you are so inclined, tweet at us.
Yeah, WTM Sean, at Squid Sports Head, at WTM Network is the place for the whole network. Subscribe to that as well. You get everything that we do here. So until next week, we'll see you later, buddy.
Peace.
The following podcast is a W2M Network original production. Visit W2Mnet.com for all of our other great podcasts, plus news, reviews, articles, and opinions from the worlds of wrestling, video games, football, and entertainment.